Hello and welcome back to another episode of Inside the Asperger Studios. My next guest is an educational therapist who will tailor a program to your child's learning needs so they can succeed in school properly. Because we all know those who are neurodivergent struggle harder than most of those who aren't. So sit back, relax, and grab your favorite beverage, and I'll see you on the other side. See you there.
I wanna believe in the truth, but only see what I'm shown. Got the freedom to choose, but can't decide on my own. Follow what the group is thinking, bottle up my intuition till it's popping out the box that I don't fit in. I wanna believe in the truth, but only see
Hello and welcome back to another episode of Inside the Asperger Studios. Today I'm joined with Laura Webb. Welcome to the show, Laura.
Thank you for having me.
So why don't you tell me a little bit about yourself?
Okay. Well, I am I am an educational therapist, and that encompasses a lot of things. I have a very interesting job. So how I got into it was I am dyslexic, and I knew that, growing up. I didn't really figure it out until I was out of college, unfortunately. I'm one of those hyper, functioning women who really did well, but it took a lot out of me. I did really well in school. I did really well in college, but I white knuckled my way through. And, I became a tutor and I loved seeing people one-on-one. I had a speech pathology degree once I graduated from college. And I really liked helping, people one-on-one. I knew I wanted to work with kids and educate them in some capacity, but I knew that I didn't have the heart for full classrooms. So I started getting into discovering, as I'm just doing straight content tutoring, there's all kinds of minds here. This one student needs this thing and this other student needs another thing, and this is really hard to content tutor with different kinds of minds without all the information. So I went back to school for educational therapy because I thought I gotta learn more about the brain and what it does and how, I can better help my students. I loved this program I did. It was at UCSC Extension in California in Santa Cruz. And that really helped me understand, like, oh, there are all these, kinds of minds. So I thought, well, I really know that through this education part, the higher education, I definitely have dyslexia because they would give us like experiential tests and, and say, this is what it's like if you have this, and this is what it's like if you have this. I was like, I definitely have dyslexia. So it was interesting as self-reflection. I also knew that I had auditory processing issues and that I had trouble with numbers too. So I learned a lot about myself with dyscalculia, dyslexia, and auditory processing issues. I went, okay, those are the things that I deal with. Maybe I can help other students with those things. So I got a lot of training on how to help dyslexic students and started to really specialize in that, in like helping kids learn to read. And I loved it. So I did that for a long time. And then I've just recently honed in my specialization and discovered in the last like 2 years, and really since the pandemic, I've really realized, like, hey, I think I also have ADHD, which in women is so different. It looks so different. So owning that, realizing that as an ADHD woman, I really have a heart for like specializing in that as well. So long story short, I've lived and worked in California, tutored, and then became an educational therapist, worked for a practice, had my own business, had a lot of different ways that I started helping different minds, and I had a lot of experience doing so. I also worked for a really wonderful program that did helped people with traumatic brain injuries and strokes. And so I would teach their brains. But it turns out, even if you've had a TBI or a stroke, Your brain is still your brain. So if you have ADHD, you have dyslexia, you still have those issues. You just now have an extra challenge of, your brain has now been affected in these ways. So I started to see like, hey, if you have a stroke, like, yes, your brain is affected on that left side and your language center is, but your thinking and your learning is still the same. Your acquisition of how you need to get that brain and learning back is still the same. So that education of different kinds of minds really came in handy there. And then I now just have my own business doing educational therapy and working with families as a whole. So somewhere in there, also a couple of years ago, my sister and I, she's my younger sister, we always knew, she has sensory issues. She has a lot of different things that as a family we were like, okay. But in the last couple of years, with the availability of like TikTok and other women coming in, coming out and really speaking up about their experiences, we've been able to understand that she has autism too. And so she and I, just for the last 2 years, knowing that she has autism and that I have ADHD and how we function has been life-changing. And so that's like my main goal now is to help families understand the dynamics between everybody, not just child and parent, because it's always, yes, the children, yes, the child. Your child may have dyslexia, ADHD, or autism, and those are really my specialties. But this is how it affects your dynamics, and this is what they need. And that realization for us both in the last couple of years has just been so crazy life-changing. So that's the main thing that's gone on in my life since the pandemic. But
Now, it must be
yeah.
very interesting the fact that you're realizing with your ADHD and your sister's ASD that you're both kind of overlapping each other in traits. You're probably
Yes.
realizing that now.
Oh my gosh. And just the natural things that we do. I would, talk for her when she was really little. She just would not talk to strangers. She would hide behind my leg. And I was like, she always said her mouthpiece. And, it was kind of like worrisome to my parents, but they were like, well, we're making it through the world. And now it's like she was completely shut down and nonverbal to strangers, unless she knew you very well, that it wasn't going to happen. And I still, even as an adult, I would interpret social cues for her just naturally. No, they meant this. And she was like, oh, she meant that? I had no idea. That's interesting. And now, though, through the lens of actual diagnoses, we can both be like, okay, that's because, she can say that's because of my autism that I didn't understand that. And I can say, man, I need accountability. Can you help me by checking in with me and seeing if I did this thing for my project on Friday? Or, but we work so well together now, and we are so much closer because of the actual diagnoses. That's what I want for everyone. I want everyone in their family to be using the right language and understanding each other more deeply.
Now, when you got diagnosed with ADHD and even your dyslexia, did that kind of open up the world to you and make you realize, oh, this is why I struggled so hard in my life, why I had to focus 10 times harder than everyone else?
Yes, because you feel like, I don't know why, but I have to work three times as hard as everyone else. And who knows what stories we make up in our minds. I feel like I probably had, a lot of self-esteem issues because of it. There are just many reasons that you might make up in your brain about, I'm stupid. I must need, extra. No one else seems to need this. Your inner dialogue is just so much worse than an actual diagnosis and an actual reason for the way that your brain is. But yeah, I feel like it it took me a lot of reflection, and it took me about a year to actually understand and reflect over my whole life, that process of like deconstructing your life and rebuilding it and with that lens of proper diagnosis. I'm sure I know that your past guests have talked about that, and it's so interesting. But you know, I feel like informal diagnosis is a diagnosis. But so even though I had worked with populations of autistic, dyslexic, ADHD in a specialized way, like advocated and told parents exactly what it is, how to help, how to work with it, I never saw myself as ADHD. I never saw it in myself until I understood what it means in women and girls and how it's different. And so then I said, oh, okay. So about, you know, it's only been 2 years since I've given myself that diagnosis of ADHD. And so when I found out, though, is I was talking to my team of 10 people who were all educators. We were at a social dinner, and you know, we're all specialists in these things. And I said, you know, guys, I think I have ADHD. And they all went, oh. And they sort of, their faces and their cues were, yeah, we know that. Are you just figuring that out? And I was shocked because I really didn't see it in myself or know that. Well, I burst into tears after that dinner because I thought everyone else was knowing something about me that I didn't know, and that made me feel very like the whole rejection sensitivity disorder. I really thought, oh my gosh, I have not seen something in myself that everyone else has been going, oh, she also has that. That made me feel really, really sad. I called individually those people and talked to them, and it made me feel a lot better because they were just like, well, we thought you knew, and there's no way that, you know, someone as a friend would say, you know, hey, do you think you have this? I mean, you'd have to be very close. And these were dear, dear coworkers, but not in that realm. And so I loved the fact that I was able to recognize in myself due to watching videos and the availability of, you know, videos since the pandemic, and we were all shut down. That's all I was doing. And in the pandemic, man, I stopped being able to function. I did not have my office or my body doubles or my office managers anymore. I didn't have anybody to help me in. So that's when I really started to break down in my task functioning. So that's why I came to that conclusion. But yeah, it is so interesting to go through that process of acceptance and self-acceptance. And then at the same time, my sister, a little bit afterward, though, is going through, you know, I think some things are really hard for me too, but in this whole different way. So we would have many conversations about how our brains are total opposite. And they are very opposite, I think, those two things.
So you and your sister kind of combined and talked about the different traits you both have, and then probably realized, wait a minute, there are some traits that overlap, like hyperactivity, creativity, hyperfocus.
Yeah, and it's so interesting. I love those Venn diagrams. I even just sent her one recently, I think the other day, where it was like autism, ADHD, and then there was you know, where they overlap. And I was like, this is so spot on because these are the things we both deal with. And the overwhelm is really the main one where we both just get very overwhelmed in different ways. But when that overwhelm happens, what to do, how to deal with it is a place where we really bond on. But it's been so interesting just since the pandemic, and for women especially, knowing like it looks so different, but it's still the same. It's like the other side of that same coin for ADHD. So I try him on medicine, and it's only been, I think, a year and a half since I've been on a med. And I tell you what, it is scary to go on medicine having seen 20 years of children trying medicines and really, having a really hard time finding the right one. So it was about 6 months of really finding the right one for me. But then, wow, once I did, it is very life-changing. I feel like my brain functions for the first time, and I can like close the loop on projects, and I can get things done. And it's made me even more sure and even more realized in like, man, I really did struggle without this. And it was a long time of struggling without this.
I mean, that kind of reminds me of what I went through to get on medicine. I mean, st I started out with just having ADHD, and I was put on early on, I was put on Xylart.
Yes.
And then in my early teens, my parents pulled me off of it because they found out that it had la lasting effects on your liver and your lungs.
Oh,
So they tried
yeah.
to put me on Strattera. Now you take someone who's been on a stimulant and give them a non-stimulant.
Right.
You feel like a zombie.
Yes. Yes.
I was like on like they put me on 80 and then they put me on 40. I just felt nauseous in the stomach. I felt like I was a zombie walking in a fog, and it just didn't affect me. It affected me the wrong way, so I took myself off of it. And then I was
And
off.
you had cold turkey?
I went off
Cold
cold
turkey off
turkey,
of it?
yeah. Because I
Oh my
wasn't on it
gosh,
for a
then.
long period of time.
Yeah.
Because it just made me feel nauseous.
Yeah.
So I wasn't taking it regularly to be on it for a long time. And then I was off of it for almost half my life. And then one day I'm flipping through Facebook, and I find this ad for a clinical trial for autism for communication,
Oh.
a drug to help in communications, which I need because it'll build a filter for me. So I apply for it. I don't hear anything. And then the next month I get a phone call. Hey, is this Reed Myers? I'm like, yes. I'm like, how can I help you? She's like, well, you have answered a survey on the autism clinical trial. Are you still interested in it? I'm like, sure. She's like, okay, well, why don't you come out here to the hospital? And we first thing we need to do is give you a full-on test. So this was my actual full-on autism test.
Oh, first time with the, yeah, with all the right
The
questions.
right questions, splitting me and my mother up so they have a true answer for myself, so I'm not looking to my mom.
Right.
The whole put the story in order, use the tentagrams to build shapes and all that. And they said, okay, yeah, you fit up, you'll fit right where we need it. And I went through this trial until COVID hit. And then it got canceled. With
Oh
the
no.
exception of with them saying they just didn't get enough facts, but they did see a change in me. I was more attentive, proactive, more talkative.
Yeah.
And then I was talking with the therapist who runs it, and I'm like, who's like one of the top in Illinois? And I'm like, listen, I would love to still be your patient. You know my history by now. I need something to go on because if I go cold turkey out this medicine, I'm not going to be the same person I was. He's like, okay, I'll take you on. He's like, let's set up a meeting. We had a phone conversation, and he put me on Adderall. Then it became a trial and error of what dosage to put me on.
Right. Then it's, and this is a journey. I mean, every medication journey, this is what, like, the most important part for families. If you're on a medication journey, it's going to be a lot. It's going to be 6 months to a year of really figuring it out. It is a lot of work. And that's really, really difficult.
Yes.
Yeah.
I mean, it started off with five, and I'm like, five is too much. My heart is racing. I feel like I've run a
Yeah.
race.
Yeah.
He's like, okay, let's go down to half. Half was still too much. My aggression levels were up. He's like, okay, let's drop you down to the lowest it can be. I'm like, what's the lowest? He's like a quarter. And the elder, I'm like a quarter of the pill. And see, I didn't understand what he wanted me to put. He's like, so I wound up taking 0.5. And that worked.
Oh.
So it's the smallest dosage of a 5 milligram pill I've been taking. But I take it
Okay.
once a day. And it works.
That's awesome. And see, that's hard because when you have many things going on, sometimes autism can be diagnosed as just anxiety or depression. And then if you also have ADHD, it's like sometimes they treat that first. But if you don't have all the information, you don't want to just treat one of the things, especially in the medication mix. We want to have the right doctor and the right thing. And it sounds like you came out of, through COVID as I did with a life-changing, life-altering situation. Yeah. COVID hit and it was just so interesting to be isolated and to see what happened when that ha when you're presented with that, to be completely isolated by yourself. Okay, go. Yes, we're all having a hard time, but what do you do and how do you function alone? Because I was totally alone in at least for a year and a half during that whole really hard lockdown period, and trying to figure out how to function best, in that isolated situation was really where I figured out my brain. And it took all that for me to slow down enough to say, how does my brain work and what do I need? But oh my gosh, the medication journey is such a huge one. But it was only after that main part of COVID that I said, I do think I need help functioning because I'm seeing, this, and this. And I marched into my regular doctor, regular, just the doctor that I had found that was new because I had moved. And so I marched in there with all of my, facts and written out everything that I saw as evidence in myself that I had ADHD. And she said, yep, probably. Like, because she didn't have to do anything. I was like, here, and here's why. And she was like, yep, that's probably it. And so, I find it interesting that the only way for ADHD anyway, that they can really see if you have it is to just go ahead and try the medicines and see what happens. And you feel a bit like a lab rat when that happens, but you have to go through the medication process and the journey to find the right one and to really see how it feels.
I mean, I know that experience of changing doctors because my doctor, out of 20 some odd years, he's the family doctor, decides he's not getting the help he needs or the time with his patients. So he decides to become a concierge doctor.
Oh, and you're like, wait, where
Well,
are you
I'm
going?
like, but what about me?
Yeah, what about the patients you already had?
I'm like, you know my history. You
Oh,
know
it's
I'm
so hard.
autistic. You're the one who saw it in me. He's like, yeah, but aren't you're not gonna have to trek all the way out here into the burbs to see me anymore. He's like, what am I gonna do? He's like, you gotta find a new doctor.
But the newness of
See
that's horribly hard.
yeah, it is. But what's unique about me is if I wanted something, I research it. So I started going through the hospital or two hospitals looking for a doctor. And on the doctor's pages, a lot of them have videos. And I came across a doctor talking and he talked about the fact that his brother was autistic. And he liked the fact that how the people that treated him were genuine. And I knew he would be the doctor to have because he understood autism.
Yes. And
And
you are the right person with the right words.
And
Yes.
fortunately, he wasn't taking anybody new. So I sent an email to his team and I said, hi, my name is Reed. I know you're not taking any new people, but would you take an exception to me because I'm autistic And I know your brother is autistic, and I know you'd understand my background. And then I got an email back saying the doctor would be happy to take you.
Oh, that's so awesome. I do think that seriously, every time that you know yourself and then act from there, that's when you get what you need in return from the world. So, like, my sister now has my niece, and she, we're like, okay, we see that genetic component. Let's go from there. But the hardest part is going from a place of this is my brain and I accept it fully, and then I have to go from there and act accordingly out in the world. I mean, if you can't figure out what is going on in your own brain, or that you don't have all the information, you can't then seek out what it is that you really need. And so you just keep getting frustrated or keep getting, nose or sent in the wrong direction. I really think that, like, people nowadays, because there's so much information out there that, and with professionals like me, like you can see things in yourself and seek information like you did, and then try to know thyself, like know your own brain first and operate from there and advocate for yourself that way.
So you went and got a degree as an educational therapist. What exactly is an educational therapist?
So an educational therapist in general is someone who works with usually a student to help them understand their learning style, and then or their learning disability, it could be, and then help them access help in the school the right way. So it's almost like it could be a case manager job. It's a very interesting job. I work with a lot of different people and a lot of different ages, but I'm trying to manage their case by talking with their teachers, talking with their therapists, talking with everybody else in their lives to make sure that they're getting quality of care and that they are accepted in the different places in their lives for who they are. And that's the hardest part, is just helping them advocate for, or really advocating for them until we can help them advocate for themselves as they grow and accept their own brain. And then there's a component of just teaching them how they do operate and what how they their brain works best. I became within the educational therapist, like career, I became a dyslexic reading specialist. And that's because I, with a dyslexic mind, wanted to seek out everything that I could about learning to read. I was like, well, why is this? And what's the best way to do it then? And so I have all the trainings, and I love teaching struggling readers now. That's like one of my favorite things to do. And a lot of times you get a struggling reader that also has autism, that also has ADHD, or and then there's a lot of different nuanced things that you have to talk about to accept and know, their brain, so that then they can learn to read, they can learn to do math, they can learn to, and really be successful. That's the key, is how do they be successful in not only school? I mean, school's like one thing, but just life. Like, how are you going to function? How are you going to access what you need in life? So it's interesting as a job because it's never the same, because no two brains or people are the same. So you get a student, and it's like, okay, what is this individual capable of? And what do they need support? How can I get everybody on board so that we can support them in the right way?
I mean, that is so important. I mean, one of the things you mentioned is that they need to learn to speak and advocate for themselves. And I just wrote a huge book, which basically follows my life from beginning to end. But through it, I throw stories in. But there's an important message, which you mentioned, but not in such a way, is that you need to step out of your comfort zone.
Oh, that is brilliant. And
Because,
that's exactly.
I mean, you're going to come across, and I'm pretty sure you've come across a lot of autistic kids who will tell you they're happy where they're at. But what they don't realize is that little bubble is going to burst the minute their parents die. And then they're left in the world on their own.
Right.
What
Or
are you
any
going
kind
to
of
do?
change.
Yeah, things
Yeah.
change. Do you know how to talk to your doctors? Do you know how to talk to the
Right.
insurance companies? Do you know how to balance a checkbook? Talk to the bank. And my book is all about the fact that you see all these things I've done. These are all because I stepped outside.
Yes. And that's like the antithesis to the autistic brain wanting routine and sameness. And you know, I think that is a real unique thing about you. Like you're saying, that ability to see that and then as a need and then actually do it. And I do think that like it might be there's a little bit of the dyslexic mind in there that our brains as dyslexics are very out of the box, very like, you know, entrepreneurial and very like, what do I need to do to get this done? And we're very scrappy, you know, as a type of brain. And so sometimes what I love about being, you know, having many different things go on in your brain and diagnosing and dissecting your brain is going, hey, some of these things are actually an asset. Some of these things are amazing to have because, you know, that part of your brain lets you override and then do what you need to do in the world. And you can see things in a different way and not just one way. So I love that. And that's fabulous that you wrote a book. Oh my gosh. I'm starting to kind of, and this is where I have trouble because of my ADHD is like outlining. I'm starting to outline my book, but my book would just be called Radical Brain Acceptance because that's my new tagline. That's what I want for everybody. I want you to, you know, I want to talk to other friends and I want to talk to people in this language of brain. And when you come across someone who clearly, you know, clearly is struggling and you know what's going on because you can see A, B, and C. But as a friend, it's not your place to like diagnose or say anything. I want everyone to come from the place of that radical brain acceptance, knowing thyself. And then we can all speak in this other language that is so much more accepting in the world, right? So just in general, it's going to make our world a such a better place if we can all just speak this language of like, oh, you have trouble with this. You know, great, I can do that. One of the examples that I sort of outlined was if I'm asking for directions, I have because of the dyslexia, I left and right, you know, if you're going to tell me auditory directions, I cannot absorb that. So, you know, just asking all the time, you're trying to advocate, you're trying to say, now, how do I do this? And then someone starts to tell you auditorially, and you're like, I lost
I
it.
get that so easily because when I was at school, I had a kid try, I had a classmate try to explain to me the assignment. Our assessment test and explain to me the math in them center. I get it as they explain it. The minute I turn around and want to walk away, it's like gone.
What?
My
Yeah.
mind doesn't,
What
I'm
did you
like,
say?
what happened? I understood it was
Right.
sitting there. Why isn't it cemented in my head?
And feeling embarrassed to ask for that information in a
Again, yes.
different way is the problem. Yeah. And so we got to get over that shame part and just accept your brain for the way it is and say, you know, my brain needs that in a different way. I was so proud of myself because the other day I had an air conditioning repairman come over. And you know, I live by myself. I'm a woman, and he starts going off with this mechanical explanation of what happened, and I was just it's you know, in that trauma of like you're saying things that I really don't understand. And he was so awesome and kind and smart, and he was younger. But you know, just being who I am now and what I do, I said, you know, I wonder if you could write that down for me, or if I could give you a piece of paper and you could write all of this out. And then you could take me out and show me the unit and we'll go look at it. And I could have your notes and then you could explain it again. So I just said exactly what I would need in order to absorb that information, to reference it later, to have it. And he was so kind. He said, yes. And I will also put the notes in my in an email later. So not only did I have it in paper, then I had it in his own words later after I wrote it and he, you know, looked at what I was writing down. But that, just in every day when you if you go to the bank, and this is what I used to teach to my TBI students with invisible disabilities. They
Okay.
might have had a trauma in the brain, right? And they really couldn't go to the bank and absorb any kind of auditory information. Their memories were shot, but you couldn't tell. That's an invisible disability. So are these things that we're talking about. So we would practice and we would say, I have, and we would have them say, I have had a traumatic brain injury. I need you to write all of these steps down on this piece of paper for me. And I just think now when I reflect on those activities we did at the stroke center, we need to do that for our brains, no matter what has occurred. If you know that you have trouble with A, B, or C, don't just silently suffer. Don't just not understand what's going on. Like, try to advocate for what you need, and that self-advocation is so important.
Now, you're working with the autism community. What is it like for you? I mean, it must be so different to see different students with different minds and different likes and different passions.
Yes, I love it. I usually have autistic people who also have dyslexia. And so we talk about that combination and what it looks like. And honestly, I ask my sister a lot of questions, and she's a teacher. So she asked me questions about the students that she has, like, what do you think about this one? And they're doing this. And it's very beneficial for us both. But in the autistic community, I am usually saying, I have, it can go both ways. I have a student that is very is has autism, but also has a very severe dyscalculia. So we were just trying to get his high school math credit, and all we're doing is trying to go through this high school math credit program together. But the way that we do that, it has to be very routine. It has to begin and end the same way. There's a reward system there, so there's a way that I try to work with students that have trouble with the curriculum that works for them. So that's the challenge is, okay, we have to do this thing for you to be successful and graduate high school or graduate anything. And so, but how do we do it in a way that's going to work for you? And that's something that sometimes I've never run across anyone that can fit in with the way that they need it presented. So that's like a unique thing about me is I can be like, all right, we're going to design a unique curriculum or system for this one person, and we're going to do it that way. And so that's how I design any kind of, program for my students.
Now, you've also been working with kids who have executive functioning skills. What kind of tools do you help them? Because I know myself, I have problems with time, with scheduling, with
Oh
distance.
my God. Yes. The time blindness is so real. And so, whether it's digital or paper, the executive functioning part, like, say, a lot of times it comes up with middle school, and whether it's a boy or a girl, but it's a lot of times middle school boys. But if we have trouble, like, the bottom of the backpack is where the homework was, there's a couple things we can do. I have a binder system that I help parents and make for their kid, which includes in the very beginning of the binder, a folder that has this is where the stuff is that it needs to be done. So a homework side, but then a turn in side for this is where stuff gets, is in the turn in. But then we have to work with the teachers to say, hey, you go to this person's binder, reach in the turn in area. You can get that piece of paper from this student and help them until they get into the routine of turning it in. So we almost have to set them up with a system that goes back and forth in the binder, but everyone else needs to be responsible in the it's almost like a symphony coordination of helping this kid turn things in, because that is the hardest part. And online, it makes it a lot harder because everything's so nebulous. But on paper or online, we do a weekly meeting for, planning, for setting your calendar dates. And then I find it is helpful to have a paper calendar with the week And then, oh, I have a wall. This is what works for me and a lot of my students is I put the whole year up on the wall. Maybe it could be 3 months at a time if it's too overwhelming, but I put it up on the wall so that you can see ahead of time what's going on. You can kind of move through time in a space where you can interact with it. So, and put your body up to it and say, okay, this is happening now. And then this is next month. And this is, so there's a lot of training with families as to how to help them to do that with executive function. And then I also have a women's group for moms or for anybody that needs that accountability. So we have a Monday, I call it the Squirrel Club. But I love doing this because this is my time with, you know, my group to plan out the week that I do this all for myself. And that's what we do is how can we support each other planning out the week? What are the to-dos? How do we prioritize and checking back in with everybody, you know, with how did that go? And making our to-do list. So the executive functioning is real though. And that's the piece that I am so happy to know about my brain, especially, is that I need help with that part. Because I can fully empathize now. The medicine helps, but man, being able to just finish a task and being paralyzed and not able to do so, even though you want to do it, that's the hard part that parents don't understand. So that's a lot of what we have to explain.
All right, let's go back to growing up for a minute. What was it like living with your sister who was autistic?
Yeah, so I was a lot of the time in charge of her, and so it was very interesting to be, you know, as a young child that also had my own issues, but to have this little this little other being that I'm trying to talk for, help out. But a lot of times, I mean, she's just a burst of energy, and I love her. It was at home, it was just normal. Everybody, you know, acting normal in front of each other. And then it was watching her shut all the way down in front of anyone else new, and protecting her and talking for her, honestly. And then, you know, as she grew, it was more like watching her really struggle with, social stuff in schools and just dealing with, you know, what was going on altogether. I think that it was hard for me to be in charge, and it was hard also for me to leave because once I left and went to college, I did feel this awful sense of responsibility. I didn't go far. I went to college in the same town so that I could be near, you know, to but it's a lot to put on a kid to you know, help out and be someone's everything. But I do remember, this is the coolest part, is just remember helping her with school. And so this is where my interest in being a tutor it came from, is I would help her. She would be on the outside trampoline and I would be doing math flashcards with her, which, you know, both of us have dyscalculia, so neither one can do a lot of the math facts still. I mean, they're difficult, but learning how she learned and helping her helped me in my career and what I wanted to do. So it was an amazing experience growing up with her. And then I took it and, you know, have done made my whole life about it. So it was, you know, it was interesting, but it's been great to see how far she's come to and how she's overcome her own, you know, not and the whole time not knowing what's going on, but just overcoming. Not that that doesn't come with stress and anxiety, because it does, until you finally realize what, oh, that's what's going on.
Now you have dyslexia. Did you have to come up with your own tips and tricks for you to be able to read and so you're not missing or scrambling or reversing words?
Yes, I still have trouble, but once I learned, so I went back and after postgraduate, I got all these trainings, one of the things was the Orton-Gillingham based reading program. And even in my, I think I was upper 20s or early 30s, it was a long time ago, but when I was in my learning that, Orton-Gillingham direct instruction for dyslexic readers, I noticed, oh my gosh, I'm reading better because I'm learning about how to teach this. So the fact that it worked so well for me, decoding words, learning how, syllables break up and learning how words work, because it worked so well for me as an adult, I was like, well, this is amazing. This is fabulous. I use it to, in almost the same way to this day, tweaking it, making it more fun. But the way of instructing readers that have dyslexia is very different than others. And so it worked so well for me. It worked so well for me that like I didn't enjoy reading at all. What, not for fun. It was just to get through school. And then finally, this was around the time where the Twilight movies were coming out. And I remember reading a full Twilight book. It was pretty, it was popular. My girlfriends were reading. I was like, okay, let's do this. But it was the first book that I actually enjoyed. And this was in my 30s. And it was just such an aha moment of like, oh my God, I'm reading now to the point where I can enjoy it instead of just struggle, struggle, struggle through it.
Okay, so why don't you tell me a little bit about learning beyond the letters?
Learning Beyond Letters is my passion. This is my baby. I have a website and my business now is called Learning Beyond Letters because I think it is about the reading and it is about the letters on the page, but it's a lot about a lot more that's beyond that. It's about how our brain functions and how we can radically accept our own brains. If we can do that, then anything's possible. We can, learn to read. But so it's been 4 years that I have implemented these. I have since the pandemic had to put my entire practice on Zoom, which has been so great. And I do love it. It's actually how I'm doing it now still, except for I'm starting now in the Tulsa, Oklahoma area to do some more in person, just back from not doing that for so long. I love doing in person, seeing kids one-on-one. It's so awesome. So now I can do virtual and Zoom and in person, which is just beyond. It's so crazy cool that I can do both. But learning beyond letters, I started to go beyond just one-on-one tutoring because I want the parents to have resources. So I want parents to know like what to do. So I have parent classes. I have the Squirrel Club, obviously, that is a resource for women and for anybody that needs accountability. On Mondays, we meet Monday mornings. And then the parent classes are, what are the stages of struggling readers? What happens when my child is really struggling to read? What does that mean? And then it's about the executive function, organization stuff. So I have different options on there, and it's been so cool to expand.
Now, what have you learned from your own students? I know everyone that I talk to that's worked with students, they get so passionate because they learn so much from their students. What have you
Oh my
learned?
gosh. Yeah. My students are amazing. They teach me every day. That's why I am so interested still. Because the person with ADHD, right, to keep me interested in this job takes a lot. But each student I have is so individualized, so unique. It's amazing. I have a student that, is going off to college, has autism, has dyslexia, and just getting her ready to go off to college. We got the loops, the earplugs with the different settings for sound dampening. And we got, her schedule, and we went through exactly what it is that, she would do, what you would do if you were overwhelmed. So just going through those things. And this is in addition to going back to reading basics and teaching her how to decode for the dyslexia. I mean, this is we took a break from that in order to like, okay, now we have to transition into this other environment and we'll take that back up when we get into classes. But every student, their resilience and their journey is awe-inspiring. Most of my students just that, that, and I have students for a long time sometimes. Sometimes I'll see them for, up to 5, 7 years. so far. I have students from a long time ago still, so we really get close.
Now, what made you want to work with stroke victims?
Oh, back then, yeah. So that was, and it was so interesting. I was tutoring by myself with, I would see families and adults once in a while, when they brought their student in and out. But I really was craving like adult interaction, and I wasn't, I was only able, I was tutoring after school. So I was just like, hey, I wonder if there's something else that I could do during the day that might give me some more social interaction, because I was really missing that. This was pre-pandemic, but really just wanting to look into something else. So I started volunteering first, and then I really, really liked it so much that they hired me for different reasons. So I started teaching memory class, I started teaching a computer lab, and gosh, a couple of other classes. And it was so life-changing. That it was one of the funnest things I do. So I would go, and with ADHD, it really worked for me to have different things to do. So I would do that sometimes during the day. I think it was like 3 days a week during the day, and then I would do my students after school. But it all bled in because it made me understand the brain as a whole in different ways. Adulthood, childhood, it doesn't matter. It's still your brain.
Now, what was it like teaching teachers who were changing their path?
Oh yeah. So I love doing this now because my sister is a teacher, and because I talk with her, I host a teacher appreciation night and cook for them, bake them, and really just through the pandemic, they had such a hard time. And then so I started really hanging out and serving them and trying to make it easier for them. But in that, I was like, the teachers don't get enough training in all the different ways that, learning can be different. And so I started like, okay, what can we do? How can I do professional development? And so I started doing dyslexia, like an hour of just, hey, this is what to look out for. This is how you could identify it in your classroom, and this is what you could do. So that's been really cool, just to share with them like what I know so far. That's the main one that I do. I want to get into, any kind of PD that I can speak to. So probably I would love to do one on ADHD, but the dyslexia one is my passion for teachers for sure.
What advice do you have for those who are finding out about their kids who both have ASD or dyslexia or ADHD?
Or and all. A lot of
Or
times
any
I
of it,
get it, we have them all.
or
Yeah.
just any part of the neurodivergent spectrum.
Yeah. What advice you said?
Yes.
See, there's me checking in. Like, did I hear you right? The advice I have for any student, any age, is to, like you did, research and get all the information from adults that know. And so if I can, what I do when I'm hired is talk with them as we go through material, and as we're working and as we gain trust, is just to talk with them about what it means to have trouble with, what they are dealing with. A lot of times, I'd say most of the time, the students feel like they are the only ones in the whole entire world that have these things going on in their brain. And so just helping them know that they're not, and that they're not alone, is kind of is the main thing, I think, to let them know they're part of a huge community. And that there's almost, I think, one in five people have dyslexia at this point. So with that specialization, and then the other kinds of minds, just letting them know there's so many resources and there's so many other people out there like this.
And finally, where can people find out more about you and what you do?
Yeah, so the website is learningbeyondletters.com, and I am on there. I have a 20-minute free consultation. Anything, that we want to talk about or go over that you want to know, you can just book it on there, and we can talk for 20 minutes about anything that you would like to do. You can also sign up for any of my services right on the website under services and classes. I have two coming up at the end of September, so that is, let me just see when they are. Yeah, September 25th at 7 p.m. That's Central Time. That'll be the stages of struggling reading. And then September 26th is tips and tricks to help your child create and keep organization systems. And that is more of like the executive functioning one. But yeah, you can totally get a hold of me on that website. It's not a bot, it's not an assistant, it's just me. So I will check it and be happy to talk to anybody. There's also free resources on there for parents looking for where do I go? How do I find out more about this?
And that's it, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Reed Miles. That was Laura Webb, and I'll see you in the next one. See you later, Laura.
Thank you, Reed. That was so fun.